Prabhupada ki. So tonight we're going to be looking at the last. We're going to be looking at the last seven verses of the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And this is a very significant chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. It's at the end of the middle section. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the Bhagavad Gita is like a jewel box. And the first six chapters and the last six chapters are like the base and the lid of the jewel box. And the middle six chapters are like the jewels inside. And this chapter is particularly important among those jewels. It's called devotional service. And in this rather short chapter, 20 verses, Krishna gives first a progression of how one can advance in bhakti. In the very beginning of the chapter, Arjuna asks what was better, to engage in devotion, love and devotion for God immediately, or should one first purify oneself through another process and then engage in love and devotion to God? And Krishna said, better to just do bhakti, to do love and devotion immediately. In talking about the stages of bhakti, Krishna discussed a qualification for entering from the beginning stages of bhakti to the higher stages. That qualification is peace. I'm sure we all know that the goal of bhakti yoga is to be absorbed in samadhi, to be absorbed in thought of Krishna, so that the thought of the Supreme Lord pervades our consciousness. And people ask all the time, how do I become absorbed in thought of Krishna? Well, you can't do it without a peaceful mind, can you? If you're trying to become absorbed in spiritual thoughts, spiritual emotions, but your mind is jumping all over like some monkey, it's not possible. Therefore, one must have a peaceful mind. So here in this part of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is going to describe the components of peace. What is peace made up of? What are its ingredients? Now, this peace is attained on two different paths. First, the path which we are suggesting, propagating, hopefully popularizing in our Hare Krishna movement, which is that first one engages in the limbs of bhakti without full absorption, trying to have absorption. And from doing that, one attains the peace to engage in that process of bhakti with full absorption. The other process, which we do not recommend, because it's a very slow process that generally takes several lifetimes and requires qualifications that most people in the present age do not have. Would it be just lovely if you could stand off to the side so that the words aren't on your face? Thank you. So the other path starts with being pious, what we call karma or varnashram, then doing karma yoga, which is offering your pious activities to God instead of doing them for yourself, which comes to the point that you can meditate on philosophy and become detached, which comes to the point that you can sit and engage in meditation. So whichever path one takes, in order to come to the higher realms of bhakti, where one is in samadhi of love of God, one requires peace. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport to text 13 and 14 of this chapter, says very specifically, all these qualifications enable a person to fix their mind and intelligence entirely on the Supreme Lord. So would we like to know what these are? Okay. This is our bridge to what Krishna called in this chapter, Abhyas Yoga. Abhyas yoga means where you're able to fix the mind on the Lord, where you're able to enter into samadhi. Of course, Krishna describes samadhi in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where he says that then one is in a state of trance. One sees the self by the pure mind, and one relishes and rejoices in the self. One is above all the material miseries and thinks that there is no greater gain. So this is, of course, different paths. They call this enlightenment and so forth. So it's these qualities of peace that allow us to enter into this state. Now, a very important point we should make before we discuss the specific qualities is, what is the relationship of peace to these qualities? As we're going through these qualities, you may say, what does that have to do with peace? What does that have to do with peace of mind? So these qualities give rise to peace of mind, and they are also the result of peace of mind. I'm sure all of us would like to have good qualities, yes? Mm-hmm. So who here is an honest person? Everybody here an honest person? Any thieves in the audience? Are you all honest? Can you raise your hand? Anybody? Nobody's honest? It's terrible. We better call the police. So we're all basically honest, yes? Yes? I hope so. But nobody's willing to say they're completely honest? Difficult, isn't it? Only had a few people who were willing to say they were honest. So we have, what about being kind? We're basically kind people, right? Everybody here? We don't have any sadists in the audience? No? But is anybody here always kind? Yes? Oh, that's good. Most people are not always kind. Or most of us, I'm sure, we're considerate, we're responsible, but are we always considerate? Anybody want to say they're always considerate? And maybe someone in the balcony? No? It is a problem, isn't it? So it's like we have this idealized self that's up here, huh? So my name's Urmila, right? So I have this ideal Urmila up there in the sky, and then I have the real Urmila down here on the ground, and I'm kind of looking up at her. Do you feel like that? Hey? So what's the difference between the self we have to live with every day, who's not always honest or kind or considerate or responsible and all these things that we'd like to say that we are, and the ideal self that we want to be? And the difference is peace. Do you know why we stop being honest or considerate or kind or responsible? Do you know why? We become afraid. There's some threat to our well-being. There's something that we feel we need or we want. We're afraid we're not going to get it, or we're afraid something we have we're going to lose. And then we think, whoop, if I'm honest in this situation, I'm not going to get something that I need. My relationship's going to get damaged. I might lose some money. I might lose my job. I might lose this and that. I might not get this. So I just can't be honest. Or if I'm considerate in this situation, I won't get what I need. Isn't it like that? So what happens is, when fear kicks in, our good qualities vanish. If you have no fear, then you can always manifest good qualities. And if you start practicing manifesting these good qualities, they will give rise to fearlessness. So they build on each other. As we build our concept of peace and fearlessness, we manifest more and more of these qualities. And as we work on manifesting these qualities, we become fearless. As we become more fearless, we develop more of these qualities. As we develop more of these qualities, we become more fearless. And eventually we reach the state of enough fearlessness, enough peace, that we can keep the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord visible in our heart always. At which point the effulgence, the beauty, the truth of the Supreme Lord fills our consciousness to such an extent that any remaining fear, any remaining illusion is vanquished. So here is some of the acharyas. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explaining again that these qualities in the Bhagavad Gita are the result of peace and give rise to peace. Now, Prabhupada often talks about that these good qualities come automatically by bhakti. Now, what does that mean automatically? Does that mean that as long as we're chanting Hare Krishna and we're in this process of bhakti yoga, that we don't have to do anything to develop those qualities? Well, we could also say that anyone who's a devotee of Krishna is automatically a vegetarian. But does that mean you stop reading labels? No. So you still make an effort when you're shopping to see, is this something that's actually vegetarian? So in a similar way, not only are we offering our food to the Lord, we're offering ourselves to the Lord. And therefore, we do make as part of our spiritual process, not something separate from our spiritual process, but as part of our spiritual process, we do work on developing these qualities. So all these qualities make someone very dear to Krishna. If you go to the original verses in the Bhagavad Gita, which I do suggest that you do, it's Bhagavad Gita again, chapter 12, text 13 through 20. You'll see that at the end of each of these verses, Krishna will say, such a person is very dear to me. Such a person is very dear to me. Such a person is very dear to me. And at the end he says, such a person is very, very dear to me. Krishna likes people who are full of peace and love. Don't we like people like that too? Yes. So Krishna also feels that way. So I thought we'd have a little memory aid here. We put the qualities into four main categories. Some of the qualities of peace deal with detachment above duality. Some deal with our endeavor and focus in our spiritual life. Some deal with our attitude as God's servant rather than as the master. And some deal with our relationships, particularly with other human beings in the world. So detachment, endeavor, attitude, and relationships. All right, we're going to look first at detachment above duality. So here Krishna talks about, and he actually talks about this in other places in the Bhagavad Gita also. In the second chapter, in the 14th chapter, it's a repeated theme in the 6th chapter, where Krishna says that if you want to become peaceful, you have to remain unaffected by the material happiness and distress, the material fear, and the material anxiety. How does one do that? One knows it's not me. This so-called happiness, distress, fear, and anxiety, things that are very auspicious, things that seem very inauspicious, joy and grief, desire, lamenting. Will I have that? Oh, I lost that. Oh, everyone thinks well of me. Oh, now somebody may not think so well of me. Right? Heat and cold, bodily pains and pleasures, that none of these have anything to do with the soul. These are just happening to the body and the mind. They're not happening to the self. Very much like if you're watching a film, you're watching a movie, and the character in the movie, they're famous or they're infamous. They're happy, they're distressed. But it's not your happiness and your distress. Now, if you're watching the movie and you're very involved in it, when the character feels happy, you feel happy, isn't it? But is that really your happiness? If the character is a hero and everybody's cheering, you think, yes, I'm a hero. But are you the hero? Right? Your position hasn't changed, has it? So what's happening to this body, Krishna explains in the 5th chapter and again in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we're just witnessing. We're just the witness. 13th chapter, sorry. We're simply observing the activities of the body and desiring this or that. But these things are not happening to us. Therefore, we remain unaffected. Unaffected means I go on with my spiritual activities. And I don't say, okay, now I'm going to cry, now I'm going to rejoice because this thing or that thing has happened in the world. One remains equipoised. Of course, everybody wants to celebrate. But we have an internal spiritual celebration, and therefore we are not interested in the external material celebrations and mournings. Our emotions are within. It's not that the person who's equipoised is dead. You know, you can say this table, it also doesn't have any festivals. Right? Like now the projector's sitting on the table. The table's not happy. Oh, now I get to be used to hold the projector. And when you take the projector off, the table's not sad. So we don't mean that we become like a table where we have no feelings, where we don't care about anything that happens. But it means that what we care about is internal on the spiritual platform, rather than caring about things that are external that really have nothing to do with us. So that is the secret. To be absorbed in the spiritual. That is the only way, actually, that one can remain equipoised. If you try to remain equipoised just by trying to be like a table, you won't be able to keep it up. Because we are spiritual beings, we're alive. Therefore, Raghunath Das Goswami says, the way you remain detached from what's auspicious and what's inauspicious, what materially is happy or distressful, what materially is a source of rejoicing or a source of lamenting, is that you have a full internal emotional life in regard to Krishna. So we're going to look at the next category, endeavor and focus. So Krishna says, those who want to become peaceful, they make Krishna the supreme goal of life. So we have to say frankly that most people who are interested in spirituality, it's not their supreme goal of life. It's a little part of their life. Okay, I have my family, I have my job, I have my hobby, I have my sporting events, I have this, and then I have my spirituality. You know, an hour a week, 15 minutes a day, maybe only a few hours a year, and that's it. That, my friends, will never give us peace. Because the only way to get peace is to be detached from the material ups and downs. From that, one has to be absorbed in the spiritual. And to have a real determination, I am going to make spirituality, spiritual realization, love of God, the supreme goal of my life. Whatever other goals are there in my life are going to be subordinate to that goal. They're going to be part of that goal. They're going to be subcategories of that goal. Yes, my dear friends, this is rare. Manushyanam sahasra tu kasya jadati sadaya yatatam api sananam kasyan mam beti tat fitaha. Out of many thousands of people, only one even looks for this. But without finding this, one cannot find peace. And as Krishna said earlier in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, there cannot be any happiness without peace. One should be self-controlled. One should not have to be controlled by something outside of oneself. And it's interesting also that Krishna says to become peaceful, one should be expert. The word is daksha. Prabhupada said that when we are serving Krishna, we are engaging in spiritual life, we should become very expert. He said that every devotee, they should know something of everything and everything of something. We should develop some area of expertise where we're offering that to Krishna. And pure, one cannot be peaceful if one's taking intoxicants. I mean, that should be obvious, right? One cannot be peaceful if one's gambling. That's also pretty obvious, isn't it? Can gamblers be peaceful? No. One cannot be peaceful if one's having illicit romantic relationships. That also should be pretty obvious, yes? Those are full of anxiety. And one cannot be peaceful if one's eating meat, fish, or eggs. They pollute the consciousness if one's maintaining oneself by violence. And not looking for a material result is also quite interesting. When somebody is attached to material results, they're going to be full of anxiety. So why is that? Can we completely control the results of our actions? Anybody here? So if you start some work, that you're working for a particular result. Can you absolutely control whether or not you get that result? No. You can't even control whether we're going to be in this body, you know, alive in this body 5 minutes from now. So many factors beyond ourselves that contribute to whether or not we achieve a particular result. So when we're attached to something that's beyond our control, what are we going to feel? Anxiety. Is that reasonable? Yes? And when we put our happiness, when we invest our happiness in getting a certain result, we will also be always in anxiety. So how to get free of this is one invests one's happiness in having a spiritual connection at every moment rather than getting a particular result. And without cares. Prabhupada comments here that if you don't join any party, we don't mean like a birthday party, then you have no cares. As soon as you join some faction or some party, oh, I'm with this group, then immediately you have an us and them mentality, a friends and enemies mentality. Well, the other people who are in my group are my friends, and the people in this other group are my enemies. And as soon as we think in terms of friends and enemies, again, there's no question of peace. All right, the next category we're going to look at is our attitude. So we looked at detachment above duality. We looked at our endeavor and focus. Now we're going to look at our attitude. Do we have an attitude that we're a servant or an attitude that we're the master? So Krishna says one who does not think that they're a proprietor is going to be peaceful. So we have so many things that we may say that we own. We may own a house. We may own a car. We may own a computer or a phone. We may own some clothes, some shoes, some cooking pots, some furniture. But if our happiness is invested in this, thinking, I am the owner, we're going to be in anxiety. First of all, do those things absolutely bring us happiness? Yes? No? No. Sometimes they bring us happiness, sometimes they don't. Sometimes your house brings you happiness, sometimes your house brings you distress, isn't it? Yes. When all the pipes are leaking and this and that, then your house is simply a source of distress. So if we think that we're the proprietor, then whenever the things that we're the proprietor of don't work, then we're in distress. Also, it's just not true. One cannot be peaceful when one has an attitude of falsity. How do we know that we're not the proprietor of any of our things? Even this body. Can it be taken away? Can we lose all of our things? Do we have to get a warning notice? No. You might get a warning notice. You might not. You might leave here and go home and your house is burned down and everything's gone. And there was no warning notice. Does this sort of thing happen to people? Yes. And when we die, guess what? We leave everything. All of our so-called possessions. And will we get a warning when we're going to die? Maybe, maybe not. So if somebody can take everything away from us without even a notice, then that person must be the proprietor. Yes? If I'm the proprietor, I should be able to keep it. If I'm the proprietor, nobody else should be able to take it away. But obviously there's someone else who can take it away. So the reality is that I'm not the proprietor. And if I'm holding on to something false, I'm going to be in anxiety. Free from false ego. False ego means I'm doing everything. I'm powerful. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Come on. You know, we can do something, but not as much as an illusion materialist thinks they're doing. Someone who's in reality knows that whatever I'm doing is by the grace of God. And if there's God's grace isn't there, well, I can't do anything. Right? In one moment, any of us can become incapacitated and capable of nothing. My ability to raise my arm is not independently there. And to see that everything that Krishna does is good. I'm not the doer. Ultimately, God is the doer. and whatever he does is good. So Krishna also says the qualities of peace is one is satisfied with whatever comes. That doesn't mean you just sit around in a chair all day and say, well, I'm satisfied with whatever comes. You endeavor, but you endeavor as an offering of love for Krishna without attachment to the results and with satisfaction with whatever comes. And specifically the things mentioned are whatever food, money, and residence come. So you do honest work according to your abilities. You offer that to Krishna. And whatever money you get, you're satisfied with that. They say that most people want 10% more money than they have, no matter how much they have. Did you know that? So whatever we have, we think, oh, if only I could get 10% more. And you got 10% more, then you think, oh, if only I could get 10% more. So the qualities of peace is whatever I have by honest labor, I'm satisfied with that. Whatever residence I have, by my honest labor, I'm satisfied with that. Whatever food I can get by honest labor, I'm satisfied with that. I see everything as the grace of God. And I have faith that whatever he does is good. The so-called good things and the so-called bad things. They're only good and bad from an illusory perspective. All right. Then our last one, relationship interaction, to deal with other human beings with love, with mercy, with respect, and with freedom. Loving one's enemies. Pretty common theme among all the religions of the world, yes? To love your enemies. Well, that means, my dear friends, you don't really see anyone as your enemies. What is an enemy? An enemy is somebody who wants to do me harm. That's what we defined as an enemy. But if one wants to become peaceful, one thinks, let there be good fortune for everyone. Let me not be an enemy to my enemy. How much pain there is for me when someone wants to do me harm, why should I give that pain to anyone else? And in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, it says that if you wish harm for someone else, you will suffer from harm. So we wish good for everyone, even those who wish us harm. Thinking, if this person is acting as my enemy, this is due to some karma I have done. Let me therefore tolerate. It doesn't mean you have to stay in a room with someone who's trying to kill you. It doesn't mean you can't call the police. And you don't have to stand there if somebody's trying to hurt you. But you never wish ill for anyone. And in our family relations, Krishna says, not thinking not only that I don't possess my house and my car and my shoes and my phone, but not thinking I possess my family. It's not that this is my husband, my wife, my children, my parents, my brothers, my sisters. For me to enjoy, not that I own them and they're here to give me pleasure. And if they don't give me the kind of pleasure that I want, I become angry or I become frustrated or I become disappointed. No, I see that all of these members of my family, actually they're all part and parcel of Krishna. Whatever care I take of them is to please Krishna, not because I want to get something back from them. I trust that Krishna is giving me everything that I need. Whether he gives me what I need through my family members or not, it doesn't matter. Krishna is giving me everything that I need. I take care of my family members as a service to Krishna, not because I want to get something from them. Oh, this is such a difficult one. He by whom no one is put into difficulty. No one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness or dissatisfaction. So this is also one of the behaviors that's required to attain peace. Of course, we may accidentally put people into difficulty or anxiety, but never intentionally. It's very, very common that we'll put other people into inconvenience to avoid our own inconvenience. And it was very interesting, just the other day, someone who I've never met, but who contacts me from time to time, contacted me over the computer and asked me to do something for him. And I said, well, why don't you do such and such first? that will make it easier for me. And he said, well, that would be a lot of trouble for me, he said. I said, okay, so you're asking me to do you a favor, and you're making it harder for me, so it'll be easier for you. And I thought, this is generally what we do, isn't it? We think, let the other person be inconvenienced, so I won't have to be inconvenienced. And after that, I started really noticing, how often do I do that? How often, if there's trouble to be taken that I could take, do I ask someone else to take that trouble for me, when I could easily do it myself? How often, if there's some threat to ourselves, do we choose to put someone else in anxiety for our own security? How often, in the name of serving someone and caring for someone, do we actually do things that are really for ourselves and not for them? Anyone acting in this way cannot achieve peace, because this is not the way that we are designed to function as a soul. As a soul, we're designed to be in a mood of service and love and giving. And then who is not disturbed by anyone else. So if someone else tries to put us in anxiety, tries to use us, to take advantage of us, or to harm us, that we think, I am a soul. I cannot be harmed. Krishna is taking care of all of my needs. Even if some so-called enemy harms me, even if somebody does something bad to me, whatever I need, Krishna will give me. And he may give me in a way that's not according to my plan and my way of seeing things, but Krishna's way of seeing things is always perfect. When one thinks this way, one can find peace even in the most difficult situations. And we mentioned before, avoids joining any factions. Right? Prabhupada says, a devotee never takes the part of a particular party or particular side. Therefore, he is carefree. Right? We find that the materialists, they enjoy taking sides. Huh? All the sporting events. Are people very peaceful when they go to sporting events? No. The opposite, isn't it? Of course, the ultimate expression of this is war. Which, duh, is the opposite of peace. So if one wants peace, one doesn't join any faction. All these qualities are considered to be just like nectar. When one cultivates these qualities and finds peace, it's as if one's whole life is full of sweet nectar. And Krishna says, anyone who behaves like this is very, very dear to him. So detachment above the dualities of heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, auspicious, inauspicious. Having spirituality as my full goal in life. Krishna is the owner. Krishna is the controller. I'm acting as a servant, as a co-operator. And I have love and well-wishing for everyone. I see no one as my enemy. I wish harm to no one. And anyone who wishes harm to me, I say, Krishna is taking care of me. He is protecting me. He is giving me what I need. I don't need to be afraid of anyone. Why do these qualities give Krishna so much pleasure? These are not material qualities. These are qualities of spirituality. Krishna is not pleased just with some material qualities. In fact, one cannot develop these qualities fully just on the material platform, which is why we often get so frustrated between the difference of our current self and our ideal self. One can only develop these qualities on the spiritual platform, which is why they give so much pleasure to Krishna. And Krishna then becomes controlled by such a devotee. The most beautiful, the most powerful Krishna becomes conquered completely by a devotee who has these qualities which all arise out of love. So does anyone have any questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes.
Yes, I will.
Thank you. That's a very nice question. That it's the mood that one has no desire to do ill for anyone. Because a materialistic person, how do we put this, is very willing to put others into anxiety and difficulty in order to accomplish their own goals. As soon as their own desires and needs are threatened enough, they will put others into anxiety. There may be some inadvertent putting of others into anxiety in the course of doing our duty, but we try to avoid that as far as possible. And we never put anyone into anxiety for our own sake. Arjuna wasn't fighting the battle for his own sake. For his own sake, Arjuna was perfectly willing and desirous of walking away. He said, better they kill me unarmed than unresisting on the battlefield. Yes? Is that all right?
In regards to not taking part of the say a devotee sometimes joins the religious organization, and the religious organization sometimes they split up. And they split up, and then they're part.
Then there's different factions.
Then if it's not that pure of a class, it becomes inimical to the other group.
So I think we can take him. We're here with Rukmini Dwarkadish. So as we know, Krishna had was married to more than one wife, the kings in those days. Of course, God can marry unlimited number of wives and be with each of them individually. So Krishna has more than one wife, and they have some competition, but they also love each other. Or just like Krishna in Vrindavan, there's Radharani's party, there's Chandravali's party, but they all dance Rasalila together. And there's no enmity, and there's no envy, there's no malice. So on a practical level, because we're individual living entities, we naturally, what does it mean that we're individual, that we have personality? It means naturally there's some people that we're more in sync with than others, of course. And there's different parties even in the spiritual world, but there's no enmity. And at least sometimes they do everything together. Sometimes they do things together. So sometimes all the gopis dance together. When they're under Govardhan Hill, everybody's together. In the Kaliya pastime, everybody's together. But otherwise, they're in their own groups, but they're serving Krishna without criticizing the other, without thinking they're better than the others. Is that all right? Anybody else? Yes. You have to be in anxiety. How sad. He said when he's out in the world earning his bread and butter and working hard, he has to be in anxiety. Is that what you want to believe? Difficult's okay, but you told me first you have to be in anxiety. See, often what the way that most people think is that my anxiety or my peace is due to my external situation. That the reason I'm in anxiety is because I'm working and making and getting my bread and butter. Hope there's lots of bread and butter in your house. So I think that's why I'm in anxiety. And if the bread and butter just magically appeared on my table and I didn't have to work for it, I wouldn't be in anxiety anymore. Then I could be peaceful. It doesn't work like that. Or you might think, you know, if I could go to the Himalayas and just sit in a cave and someone just delivered my bread and butter to my door, then I wouldn't be in anxiety. It doesn't work like that. Peace is an internal state. I should tell you something funny. So a couple years ago, I went to the Govardhan retreat in India. So once a year, they have a retreat where there's about 200 people that go to the foot of Govardhan Hill, and you stay in very, very, very simple accommodations. That's euphemistic. And all day long, there's just kirtan and discussion, and it was really wonderful. And there's nothing to worry about at all. You know, everything, there's your bread and butter is amply provided when you're there. So when I went there, I didn't bring my computer with me because it would have been useless to bring my computer with me. First of all, I would have had no time to turn it on, and second of all, I would not have been able to get a connection. So I had left it at my daughter's house. I was there with my grandson. And I think on day two, I said to him, oh, when I turn on my computer, I'm going to have 500 emails at least. And he looked at me and he said, Grandma, what is the use of taking a vacation from your computer if you're worrying about it? Yes? I said, oh, yeah, he's right. So it's not what you do externally. Externally, you can leave behind all your anxieties, so-called, but if your mind is still worrying about them, it doesn't do any good. Right? If you're afraid you're going to get fired from your job and you're at the beach looking at the ocean, you're still going to be in anxiety. So it's not a question of whether you work at a job or you don't work at a job. Like Prabhupada was asked once, do you make more advancement living in the temple? He said, that depends on whether or not his mind is on another subject matter. So you can still think that Krishna is the proprietor and Krishna is the controller and be equipoised from happiness and distress even at a job. Is it difficult? Yes. Is it worth it? Yes. And of course, because it's our natural state as a soul to be like this, the more you do it, guess what? The easier it gets. So you have a child, right? How many children do you have? One child. Which one's your child? This one. Okay, so you know how to walk, right? I see you know how to walk. Do you remember when he learned how to walk? Can you remember? Yeah, thank you so much. Just what I wanted. So do you remember when he learned how to walk? But you remember the process? Yeah. Was it difficult? It was difficult, yes. Was he immediately successful? No. But was walking natural? Yes. Is he successful now? Does he have to work at it? No more difficulty, yes? So Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is just like learning how to walk. It's exactly like that. It is very difficult in the beginning, undoubtedly. But because it's natural to the self, the more you practice, the better you get. And I think that at least most of us in this room, we no longer have difficulty walking, yes? You no longer think about it. So if you don't practice these qualities of peace, thinking, it's so difficult, it's so difficult, it's so difficult, it's so difficult, then it will remain forever difficult. But if you start practicing, because they're actually part of the soul, by practicing, it'll become easier and easier and easier, and pretty soon it will just be what you're doing, and it won't even be any effort at all. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Mataji is giving Srimad Bhagavatam class tomorrow also, if you want to hear, in the internet at 7:30 in the morning.